You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, May 25th, 2017.
Whatever is specific or intrinsic to Bloomington, what makes Bloomington special, those stories really do well.
Michael Glab talks with Limestone Post publisher Ron Eade in today's episode of Big Talk, coming up later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks what should be done about issues surrounding homelessness in Bloomington. But first, these local headlines.
Bloomington's Lighthouse Christian Academy was the focus of a Capitol Hill description yesterday at a congressional subcommittee hearing with Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. Representative Catherine Carf of Massachusetts asked DeVos whether she was willing to provide federal vouchers to a private school like Lighthouse that refuses or discontinues admission to students living in households with persons who identify as LGBTQ. According to a recent press release from the school, quote, Lighthouse trains each student to grow in knowledge without neglecting moral character, end quote. The Academy has concerns that the government is trying to, quote, homogenize all schools to conform to politically correct attitudes and ideologies, end quote. DeVos did not comment on whether or not she condoned Lighthouse's policy, but focused her discussion on the problems facing America's current educational system.
The bottom line is we believe that parents are the best equipped to make choices for their children's schooling and education decisions, and too many children today are trapped in schools that don't work for them. We have to do something different. We have to do something different than continuing a top-down, one-size-fits-all approach.
Lighthouse Christian Academy currently receives more than $665,000 in state vouchers. DeVos wants to give them federal funds, according to Representative Clark. Indiana State Representative Matt Pierce believes that allocating more money to charter and private schools will only harm public schools.
Every time a student chooses not to attend a public school, the state takes the money that would have otherwise gone to the public school for that student and they redirect it to the private or religious school. And because of that, if you can have a significant number of students leave the public school system, but not enough to lower the overhead costs. So if you still have to keep all your school buildings open, you have to have the same number of teachers and support staff, your costs are not going to decline, but the amount of money coming in to fund your schools is going to go down because you're going to have a significant number of people leaving.
Wednesday's hearing was over President Donald Trump's 2018 budget proposal and the $250 million in federal tax money it sets aside for scholarships to private schools. Trump has said that he'd like to increase federal school choice programs to $20 billion a year by 2020.
The Bloomington Board of Parks Commissioners authorized a pilot program that will employ residents experiencing homelessness and unstable housing to clean city parks. The program would be operated by Centerstone, a behavioral health center provider with facilities in Bloomington. Mayor John Hamilton announced the jobs initiative this afternoon in a press conference in People's Park. The administrative director at Centerstone, Greg May, is overseeing the jobs program. May addressed the board in its meeting last night.
The participants in that program are actually homeless or have unstable housing. So for unstable housing, they're either, doubled up or, kind of couch surfing somewhere. We're confident that we'll create a partnership that's beneficial to Parks and Recreation as well as the community. Our intention is to provide employment opportunities to those people experiencing homelessness or unstable housing. We plan to do that through rehabilitative services such as case management, life skills training, and supported employment or on-the-job training.
The new jobs program was recommended by the city's Downtown Safety, Civility, and Justice Task Force. The task force was formed partly in response to complaints about aggressive panhandling, drugs, and other petty crime in downtown. The task force released a list of recommendations last month, including an increase in city programming at People's Park and additional police downtown. The board also took a step towards effectively giving a piece of land on South Rogers Street to a local affordable housing organization. That organization, South Central Indiana Housing Opportunities, is planning to build 16 apartments there. The city purchased the land as part of its plans for the new Switchyard Park. McDevitt said the resolution before the board would begin the process, although approval would still be needed from the city council.
So the resolution is an overall umbrella, and the request is to get your approval for us to move forward with an ordinance to the city council because we are changing the purpose of what we purchased the land for. This is to then work towards a RFP to go into a lease agreement to lease the property for an affordable housing project. This process is the first step in securing the land and the parcel so that the total affordable housing project can move forward.
Rents at the new housing complex would range from $550 to $850 for 1 and 2 bedroom apartments. Board member Les Coyne spoke in favor of the project.
This is an exciting prospect. I actually think it's a potential model that we might look at further on, and we so desperately need to redress the affordable housing issue in this community. And here's where we can step up and help the mayor and move forward with this.
Although Mayor John Hamilton has announced he wants to give the land to South Central Indiana Housing Opportunities, the city is required by law to formally seek requests for proposals. This means another organization could feasibly be awarded the project instead.
Bloomington City Council members expressed concerns on May 24th about a proposed law that would allow bicyclists to ride on sidewalks. The sidewalk provision is part of a larger group of revisions to city code proposed by the Planning and Transportation Department. City project engineer Neil Copper told the city council that there was debate among city officials about whether to propose the change.
So this is a part of the code that we've had the most discussion about leading up to this point, so I want to go a bit further into some of the rationale. First, I'll say we talked earlier that our multi-use paths are legally sidewalks. So if we say you can't ride a bicycle on a sidewalk, we're saying you can't ride a bicycle on these multi-use paths that were built with bicyclists in mind. Second, we know there are contexts where riding a bicycle on a sidewalk makes sense for some bicyclists. There may be gaps in the bicycle infrastructure. It may be a high-speed, high-volume street that you're not comfortable being on the street. It could be a short distance to avoid inconvenience due to one-way streets, or it could be just riding 30 feet on a sidewalk to access the bicycle rack that's located on it.
Riding a bicycle on a sidewalk is currently illegal under city code, but that law is often violated. Under a proposal from the planning department, there are specific rules for how a cyclist could operate on a sidewalk.
So a person on a bicycle cannot ride on a sidewalk that's congested with pedestrian traffic, and if it is congested, they have to dismount. A person on a bicycle must yield the right-of-way to any pedestrian and give an audible signal when overtaking a pedestrian from behind. A person on a bicycle must dismount to pass a visually impaired pedestrian if necessary to avoid startling or collision or inconvenience. A person on a bicycle cannot pass within 3 feet of a pedestrian if the bicycle is traveling faster than ordinary pedestrian pace.
The law would also require cyclists to slow down when crossing streets, driveways, and alleys in some circumstances. Despite those restrictions, many council members had concerns, especially about the safety of pedestrians. During a straw poll, Councilmember Susan Sandberg passed rather than vote for the code revisions.
I see no problems on multi-use paths, but sidewalks, I do believe, are for pedestrians. And if it's happening anyway, that's one thing. But to actually permit it and encourage it, I think we're asking for a lot of trouble.
Councilmember Sturbaum also passed during the straw poll. Sturbaum said he worries the new law could make cyclists unsafe as well as pedestrians. Other members of the council were more supportive of the code amendments. Councilmember Alison Chopra says there are some instances where it makes sense for cyclists to ride on the sidewalk.
I think that's one of the main intents of this legislation is to encourage people to ride on their neighborhood sidewalks. Like currently that's not allowed, right? But it also attempts to address the safety issues that come with that, and it puts the onus on the person who decides to do that to do the right thing and beware of both their surroundings for their own safety, such as cars backing out of the driveway, which is particularly why I don't do it, but also for pedestrians. So I think that it gives a balance there.
At the end of the meeting, council members Steve Volan, Andy Ruff, and Allison Chopra showed support for the proposed law. Council members Dave Rollo, Dorothy Granger, and Chris Sturbaum voted no in the non-binding straw poll. Three members passed during the vote: Susan Sandberg, Isabel Piedmont-Smith, and Tim Mayer. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
An article about a bike ride through New Zealand in an airline magazine inspired Ron Eade to dive into the then-changing world of journalism. Now more than 30 years later, journalism is still in the process of becoming, although what is becoming hasn't been fully determined. Eade is in the forefront of new media here in South Central Indiana, now having launched the online magazine Limestone Post in 2015. A Big Talk partner, Limestone Post promises writers with a voice, photographers with a vision. Ron Eade joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest in the studio today, Ron Eade, a writer, an editor, a truck driver, an outdoorsman, and now he's a publishing magnate. He is the big boss at Limestone Post Magazine. Thanks for being with us, Ron.
Thanks for having me here, Big Mike.
Now, how did you get into this online magazine? How did that come about?
Well, I've been in the magazine business for a long time. I was a writer and editor, freelance mainly, but mainly in magazine journalism. And then a few years ago, I was teaching journalism at IU, and I wanted to get back into it. And I'd always been fond of long-form magazine journalism, you know, like the golden age of magazines in the 20s and 30s,
mm-hmm.
the New Yorker, the Atlantic, Saturday Evening Post even.
Yeah.
A print version of Limestone Post. It would be monthly or semi-monthly or something like that. And I have
you
a lot of...
You were thinking of going old school is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a lot of friends locally and elsewhere who advised me, and they are much smarter than I am, and they said, just go digital. Why go print? You're going to end up folding the print version in 5 years anyway. Why go through the headache of that? Just start with digital and get ahead of the curve. So I started looking into that and developing it and designing it, and the main idea is still the same. It's still covering a lot of categories. We focus on the arts and outdoors mainly. Those are the popular ones, but we cover health and fitness, we cover food and drink, travel. That was the idea, is to cover a lot of territory about Bloomington. With media consolidation the way it is, 90% of our media comes from six companies, I think is the latest mm-hmm. figure. Information is being consolidated, and we're getting fewer and fewer points of view. And I wanted something that would fill the gap and do some long-form stories with more in-depth coverage, more thoughtful coverage.
What's the most popular story so far?
The most popular? I don't know if I should say that, because that might be giving away some trade secrets.
Ooh, okay.
I can tell you the categories.
All right.
Whatever is... specific or intrinsic to Bloomington. What makes Bloomington special? Those stories really do well. People have such an attachment to that. And whatever they have an attachment to that they can claim here that people in other parts of the country can't claim, mm-hmm. like the quarries or chocolate mousse or Little Five.
Speaking of Little Five, one Mr. Ron Eade, I understand, once raced in it.
I did.
Tell me about that.
Well, you could maybe call it racing. I was a Kappa Sigma, and my brother raced in Little Five before me, so, you know, looking up to him, and they did really well. And so when I got to college, I wanted to race, so I got on a bike, and we were four rookies that year, and we did not do too well. But it was a lot of fun.
But
it's just
finished.
An incredible experience.
Why were you here at IU?
Following my brother and sister again. I grew up in Indianapolis for the most part.
Uh-huh.
Mainly in Indiana, or all in Indiana, but mainly in Indianapolis. And a lot of my friends from high school were coming down here, so I didn't really give it a lot of forethought.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a plan on what I would do or be. I just, hearing stories from siblings, it just sounded like a lot of fun.
What pushed you into journalism?
Well, when I left here, I was working for Anheuser-Busch in Dallas, and after 3 years in marketing, and after 3 years, I decided to take a leave of absence and travel the world. So I took an around-the-world trip and was gone for about a year and a half total, and went back to work, and I was getting on a plane for a business trip, and I saw on the cover of the airline magazine the Milford Sound in New Zealand. And I just couldn't believe it. I thought, this guy gets paid to travel like this. So I looked into it, and I had done a little bit of writing on my own, just sort of what we would call today as a blog. So I looked into it, and I had some friends at the time who were going to law school or graduate school, advancing, you know, they didn't stick with a career, and I thought, that's an option. So I looked into it and decided to get a master's degree in journalism at mm-hmm. Texas.
You don't strike me, Ron Eade, as a cubicle kind of a guy. So after getting your master's degree, you went off on your own.
I became a freelance writer. I moved to Chicago.
Ah,
and
why?
Girlfriend. And did some freelancing for Billiards Digest and airline magazines and outdoor magazines.
All we've been talking about is communication here. Where does truck driving fit in with this?
Paying off student loans? I had an opportunity in the late 90s to hop on a truck. I've had friends driving semis for a number of years, and they made it look so romantic and so exotic and so exciting and adventurous that I was living in Cleveland and doing everything I could to pay off the student loans, working temp jobs and whatever, and hardly getting any writing done. So one of my friends like make $40,000 and pay off student loans just driving one summer. And it did not work out that way. 2 years later, I was out of debt, but it was an experience.
Well, what kind of truck? A semi?
It was. It was an 18-wheeler driving from Mayflower. It was a moving van.
Uh-huh.
Which is different from what you would think of a normal truck driver who are in their seat or in their truck 24/7. We would physically get out and move the furniture. We would move people's homes.
Uh-huh.
And so every 2 or 3 days, we'd be out loading the semi with furniture. And about the time you saw your last kitchen chair and tried to fit it in the truck, it was time to get on the road and travel for 2 or 3 days. And about when you're about tired of getting your last truck stop meal, it's time to get out and exercise a little bit. So, and you're always in a different part of the country. We're in the lower 48. And it's, looking back with, in hindsight, it was the most exotic and exciting and adventurous thing. But when I really sit down and think about dealing with all the hassles, maybe I won't be doing that again.
Ron Eade, he is the big man over at Limestone Post Magazine. That's online. Thanks for being with us on Big Talk.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, what do you think should be done about homelessness in Bloomington? As the winter shelters have closed and the weather remains wet and chilly, Bloomington's homeless don't easily find a place to spend the night. Voices in the Street has asked your friends and neighbors about suggestions. What could be done about homelessness in Bloomington?
I see a lot of homeless people ignored by everyone else. I stop and talk to them. And there's really a community of people who are surviving without any kind of fixed shelter. And we've really got to do something serious about it in this town. And I'd like us to completely consider zoning ordinances and set up low-income areas with tiny homes that people can maintain for themselves. And
I don't know, I guess like increase like vacancies at homeless shelters, because I'm pretty sure they're full. And maybe do a little bit more with the food banks and try working to find a place where people can stay without being pestered by the police, and I guess are as much of a nuisance to maybe like just people. I don't know.
I think that they should make a senator or a center for them, because the church not really offering much to them and some are still left on the street. Yeah.
Government need to rethink about it and just keep them like in center and then teach them and talk to them.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have that answer because the problem is so complex. I guess if there is a global answer, it would be to try to set up, perhaps as a city, perhaps as a county, some support systems, whether that's getting off of whatever substance or having basic nutritious food. A shelter, you know, someplace. I see people when I come and go from work in the wintertime, you know, crawling out from behind the bushes. I was walking to another place downtown 8 a.m. last week and sleeping behind the dumpsters. There was a couple, you know, they were sleeping on a bunch of garbage bags. And where I park, I run into, I see hypodermics there every once in a while as well, too. So it's very complex.
But if they could open a place to just be a year round, then they can really help us. I got insurance. I got ID. And I can get them to do things. Right now, I'm an extreme alcoholic. But if I had someplace else to go, instead of trying to find a little cubbyhole, I could get myself together.
Not really understanding its origins exactly. I mean, I've heard various rumors that, you know, Bloomington is kind of supportive of the homeless community generally, so people tend to come here. I've also heard that Indiana's state government has somehow, like, sent homeless people here. But not really understanding the origins exactly, it's hard for me to say what should be done, so.
I'll tell you, just like this, get these away from me. That's what my speech right now is today. Thank you.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Cole Stinson, along with Joe Crawford for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Robert von Porowski. Engineer today was Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered to you directly. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show. It's coming up next here on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.